A suspended mobile spins around. Bright yellow letters hanging in a wire frame spell the word Pathé, followed by an exclamation mark. The mobile turns and the shadow of a cockerel appears on the wall beside it. A fiery explosion blooms against a black background. Out of the sparkling debris, white letters. BBC Films. Pathé Pictures and BBC Films present, in association with Future Films Limited, Microfusion and the Weinstein Company, and UK Film Council, a Heyman Hoskins production. An animated title sequence begins with two cherubs either side of the name credit against a red stage curtain backdrop, Judi Dench. The curtain rises. Bob Hoskins, a Stephen Frears film. Mrs. Henderson presents. A bird swoops through clouds, revealing a stylized sun pattern, and an airman dangling from a parachute pours tea. Will Young. An elegant aristocrat smokes a cigarette. Christopher Guest. Leaves blow a young lady's hat off. Kelly Riley. A couple in a vintage motor car. Thelma Barlow. Three cherubs pull up a red curtain. Anna Brewster, Rosalind Halstead, Sarah Solmani, Natalia Tenner. And Sir Thomas Allen as Eric Woodburn. Credits appear against framed black and white footage from the 1930s. Associate producers David and Kathy Rose. Line producers Kevin Van Thompson and Lawrence Borg. Executive producers for Pathé, François Yvernel and Cameron McCracken. In animation, a young lady is surprised by a monkey. Executive producers for BBC Films, David M. Thompson, Tracy Schofield. Choreography, Eleanor Fazan, Debbie Astle. Casting director, Leo Davis. Credits appear on a lady's fan. Sound recordist, Peter Lindsay. Costume designer, Sandy Powell. Makeup and hair designer, Jenny Shercore. Credits appear on a lady's parasol. Music by George Fenton. Production designer, Hugo Lukuch-Wajowski. Editor, Lucia Zucchetti. Director of photography, Andrew Dunn, BSc. Dancers stand on the wing of a small plane. Executive producer, David Orkin. Ostrich feather fans part. Executive producer, Bob Hoskins. Written by Martin Sherman. Produced by Norma Heyman. A flock of birds take to the air and the red stage curtain falls. Directed by Stephen Frears. A caption, inspired by true events. England, 1937. Mourners are gathered around a grave by a large monument on a hill.
For as much as it hath pleased Almighty God of his great mercy to take up to himself the soul of our dear brother here departed. Therefore, commit his body to the ground. Earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
67-year-old widow, Mrs. Laura Henderson, stands at the foot of the grave. She's wearing a black fur-trimmed coat, and her long black veil billows in the breeze as she scoops up some earth to scatter. A man raises his top hat as she's escorted from the grave. She approaches an Indian Maharaja.
So sorry, my dear Mrs. Henderson. Your husband was a great friend to my country.
That's so kind of you. Please join us at the house for a small luncheon in his honour.
An elderly friend accompanies her to a waiting black car and opens the door for her.
Thank you so much, Leslie. But I think I'll take my own car.
She turns and walks majestically away. The hearse leaves the monument and a select few graves around it and drives off, followed by a maroon Rolls-Royce and a cortege of automobiles. Now on a narrow country road, the cars drive almost bumper to bumper. The maroon Rolls-Royce turns sharply and heads off down another road flanked by tall trees. Laura steps through the lush, dark greenness of a forest towards a riverbank. Her chauffeur Ambrose stands by her car and watches her. Laura rows a boat through the river, its oars cutting into the water, and sending cascades of ripples through it. As she rows, her grief overpowers her. She stops rowing, and the boat drifts. She sits alone, slumped forward, shoulders hunched. Her black lace veil draped over a hat still hangs over her face. Behind her, another boat glides through the water with two men. The Rolls-Royce rounds a street corner and pulls up outside a cream Georgian townhouse. A footman opens the car door. Laura steps out and hurries inside. In the hallway, Laura slips out of her coat, then, still wearing her lace veil, hurries up a staircase and towards a room from which lots of voices can be heard. Inside, a tall elderly gentleman talks to her.
And I know that Robert would want me to be available to help you in any way.
Thank you so much.
She smiles and turns away. Another elderly man catches her eye.
He was an estimable man.
Yes, yes.
And a very dangerous business competitor.
Yes.
She smiles as she moves through the room.
Yes. Excuse me.
She places her arm around her friend, Lady Margot Conway, and leads her aside.
I am bored with widowhood.
My dear, you've just scratched the surface.
I have to smile at everybody. I've never had to smile at everybody. In India, there were always people to look down on.
People are simply being sympathetic. After all, you have lost your husband.
Well, I didn't mislay him. It was most inconsiderate of Robert to die. What on earth am I supposed to do now?
The first rule of widowhood, my dear. Important conversations occur at lunch.
At lunch?
It's really not so bad. Widows are allowed hobbies.
Hobbies?
Yes. Embroidery, things like that.
Are you mad?
I graduated to weaving. Would you care to see my tapestry?
I'd rather drink ink.
Committees are good, of course. I serve on quite a few charities. Once your husband dies, it's quite permissible to help the poor. And now there's no one to stop you buying things. Also, of course, there's a great deal of time for lovers.
Margot, I'm nearly 70.
That's true. But you're also very rich. The one cancels out the other.
Laura raises an eyebrow.
I don't know anything about embroidery.
Illuminated by a table lamp, Laura pores over a piece of embroidery, her forehead knitted in concentration.
Ow!
Oh. She sucks her pricked finger and tosses the embroidery away. Oh. A committee meeting.
Now I believe we may call it a refuge. Certainly we do not want any term alluding to unwed mothers in the title. Nor do we wish for the public to know the purpose of the house.
But I've told all my friends that I'm helping to build a home for future bastards.
The ladies stare at Laura.
Sorry.
Laura gets into the back seat of her Rolls Royce.
Home, madam?
I need some fresh air. Let's drive.
Yes,
Ambrose closes her door and drives her around Piccadilly Circus. It's raining. Everywhere looks grey and dreary as pedestrians hurry about under umbrellas. They pass the Statue of Eros. A huge sign under a clock on a building reads, Guinness is good for you. Ambrose takes a turn down Great Windmill Street and pulls up outside a small dilapidated theatre on a corner with a for sale sign on a disused hoarding. Laura looks out at it absentmindedly. Something about the place captivates her, and she sits forward for a better view. Danger, keep out, has been daubed on the boarded up doorway. Laura leans back again and looks straight ahead.
I think I should see Alec.
Row upon row of small, white identical tombstones in a British war cemetery in northern France. Laura walks amongst them until she reaches one in particular.
Hello, Alec.
She stoops down and places a posy of white flowers by the simple, unadorned grave which reads, Alec Henderson, Captain, 1894 to 1915, aged 21 years. Laura, bejeweled and wearing a midnight blue hat and suit, sits on the neatly mown grass in front of Alec's tombstone and chats to him. Time passes. Ambrose approaches her quietly and gently places her heavy fur coat about her shoulders. It's late when Laura walks hurriedly back towards her car.
Let's return to London, please.
She pauses before she gets in.
I'd rather like to visit old Windmill Street again.
Lady Conway picks her way towards the disused theatre in Old Windmill Street. A man doffs his hat to her.
Hi, madam.
Lady Conway, in a rich brown fur stole and matching burgundy suit and hat, looks perplexed as she daintily steps along a gangplank past a collection of builders and carpenters into the theatre. She steps into the auditorium and glances around peevishly. A builder strides past her with a ladder.
Aren't you back?
She spots Laura surrounded by workmen.
Laura? What on earth?
Margaret. Renovations, dear.
It's theatre. Isn't it delicious?
I own it.
Own it?
Well, you told me now there was no one to stop me from buying things, so I bought a theatre.
But I meant bracelets and earrings. What on earth are you going to do with a theatre?
Hell, I thought music hall or what do they call it in America? Vaudeville. Actually, I haven't thought about it. But dear, what am I going to do with it?
Clearly, you need someone to run it for you.
Oh, you think? Oh, I knew you'd give me sensible advice. But who?
Oh, that's an easy assignment. I know just the man. He's out of work at the moment, but he's very good at running theatres.
Leslie perks.
I can't imagine where she is. She was meant to be here 20 minutes ago.
A man paces in his office.
Well, that's that then. I can't hang around here all morning. I've an important meeting to go to. I'm sorry, Lord Charles.
Oh, he was terribly ill in the car. Nerves, I imagine. Little sweet. Hello, Leslie.
Hello.
She turns.
Who on earth are you?
This is Vivian Van Damme.
Don't be silly. That's not a British name.
In actual fact, my father's a lawyer in Bishopsgate, although some of his ancestors are from Holland.
Oh, dear God, you're Jewish.
As it happens, I'm not.
Well, of course you are, dear. Just look at yourself. But the show business is filled with Jewish people, isn't it? One must make do. We haven't met. I'm Laura Henderson.
Yes, I imagined you were. You're 20 minutes late, and you're rude.
He heads out.
Perhaps he's the wrong man.
No, I don't think so. Where are you going? Leslie, where's he off to?
Do stop him.
I'm here to offer you a position.
You can't offer me a position if I'm walking out on you.
But that's why I'm offering it, dear. You've got gumption. Oh, don't you adore that word? And you're smoking a cigar. Anyone who runs my theatre must smoke a cigar. It's so manly and so...
What?
Jewish.
Vivian collects his coat and hat from a stand.
I have a theatre.
Vivian stops in his tracks.
I have a theatre.
He turns to face her down a long corridor.
Just sitting there, waiting for a brilliant manager to come and turn it into a commercial proposition. A manager who might bring some enjoyment and amusement back into the West End. A manager with vision and courage. And if that isn't you, then my intuition has failed me. So by all means, hurry off, Mr. Damban.
Van Damme.
Oh, if you insist, dear. If you insist.
She swans back into Leslie's office. Vivian stands on the stage.
Whose idea was it to cut the building?
Mine.
Oh, well.
Laura steps onto the street with Vivian and looks up at her theatre.
There should be a sign saying Windmill Theatre. Up there, see?
You're going to retain the name.
Well, I find it helps your driver if the theatre is named after the street.
What do you know about the theatre business?
Oh, almost nothing.
I have to have total control of the production side. Is that clear? All artistic decisions are mine. You may voice an opinion if you must, but I have the final say. Understood?
Of course. I think we'll make a splendid team. Let's go and sit down in that charming little cafe. I'm sure its business will improve when our musical review opens.
She hurries into the cafe, followed by Vivian.
Who said we were doing a musical review?
Well, I assumed.
All those decisions are mine. Remember.
A sign is hoisted up.
That's perfect, just there.
Higher.
The windmill sign is raised.
No. Come back to the middle.
Higher.
Oh.
Vivian glares at Laura.
Higher.
Fine. I've had an idea. Let's go inside.
They head inside as the sign is fixed to the theatre.
It is a radical idea.
Oh, jolly good. What is it?
Non-stop performances.
Non-stop?
Yes. Instead of two shows a day, we run our show all day long. Five or six performances a day, one after another. It's never been done in England before. Every theatre here is exactly like every other theatre. No one is attempting anything new. It's good to stir things up, don't you think? We'd be a sensation.
Well, I've no idea what you're going on about, but I do admire passion.
Yes, well, what else is there?
How much will this experiment cost? I mean, what do I stand to lose if it fails?
Well, anything up to £10,000.
Laura begins to smile.
What fun. I'm in a sporting mood today, Mr. Van Damme. It must be the weather. And what'll we do?
A musical review.
What'll we call it?
Well, I thought Revue de Ville.
Oh, yes. That's lovely.
Laura, in a black floral kimono, slips off her shoes and stands on a chair to address her party guests.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've invited you here this evening to sip a bit of sherry. I'm told cocktail parties are out of date. And to announce the most amusing news. The Windmill Theatre will open on February the 3rd with the most revolutionary programme ever seen in England. In this enterprise, I shall be carrying on the work of my late husband, who spent a great deal of time and money helping stage people, especially those in the field of variety.
Is that true?
She's making it up.
As you well know, these are difficult times. So many of our delightful variety performers have been forced onto the milk line.
Bread line.
Bread line. Bread line. Revue de Ville is an attempt to create...
employment.
Employment. Employment for these delightful creatures. Our productions will be guided and overseen by our resident genius, our brilliant general manager who comes to us from Central Europe, Mr. Vivian Van Damme.
Vivian, in dress suit and bow tie, smiles graciously, then murmurs to Leslie.
We won't be able to work together, you know that.
You're a perfect match.
Laura's with Lady Conway.
So, you found yourself a continental. Nonsense. He's as English as you or I. But he's terribly alive, don't you think? Just something one can sense.
Laura, you have an infatuation.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. It's the show business I'm attracted to. Tomorrow, we have auditions. Isn't that exciting? People come in and entertain us, and we say either stick around or buzz off.
Next day, a long queue of men and women wrap around the outside of the now revamped Windmill Theatre. Vivian sits in the auditorium to watch the auditions. His secretary Maggie sits behind him, and Laura's a few seats away with her dog Gilpin.
You may not be an angel, 'cause angels are so
thank
few.
Thank you. Next.
But until the day that one comes along, I'll string along.
Next.
That's when something in the one came along, I'll sing along with you.
Laura next. Eyes the dispassionate Vivian and sighs.
Thank you, Miss Kramer. That'll do.
The poor thing.
Next.
My dear, would you just
Laura
wait
stands over
there?
And turns to Vivian.
Mr. Van Damme, I spent many years in the Far East with my husband, witnessing what one might call pagan rituals, but I've never seen anything as barbaric as this.
Welcome to the theatre. Next.
She hands money to Miss Kramer.
Buy yourself a
young man slips into a seat at the back of the auditorium.
Who's the young man at the back?
Shh. Concentrate on the audition.
Laura returns to her seat close to Vivian. Vivian's
next.
Attention is caught by a unicyclist juggling knives.
You'll have him.
Laura gapes at Vivian. Vivian looks round sharply to the young man at the back. The young man, Bertie, smiles and nods.
Next
up are two goofy men, one skinny, one rotund, wearing silk tunics, doing the Egyptian sand dance. Laura's unimpressed. Vivian watches with a smile, then turns back to Bertie and nods.
Why do you keep looking at that boy?
That boy, as you call him, was the featured performer at the pavilion. We've snatched him away. He was a big help to me. Got excellent taste. He seems to agree with all of my choices.
Well, including these demented pharaohs.
Book them.
Right, Bibi.
Are you mad? They're not in the least authentic.
Vivian holds his finger to his mouth, then turns back with a smile towards the stage, where one pharaoh proceeds to clamber shakily onto the shoulders of the other, until he's finally standing on the shoulders of the other.
And over, over, steps up all the stage. Rip, pick up, toe. Tap, step, all three, pick up, step, and back. Six, step, eight, pick up, step, pick up, step, pick up, all three, pick up, all three. Maxi board, heads up. Thank you, ladies. Let's change over. Quickly, girls.
See what they're like in the back of the stall. Pay attention to
Bertie nods and stands beside Laura in the auditorium. Vivian's on stage as choreographer Frank Lawson puts a group of young, pretty girls through their paces. Laura queries Bertie.
Do you find these women attractive?
Some of them are very pretty.
Oh, yes, I can certainly see that. But do they intrigue you as a man?
Bertie lowers his head. He leans towards her.
I have other inclinations.
Four, and... Oh!
Come on, girls, get your legs up.
How delicious.
And use your backs. Yes, girls. Next group.
Vivian walks amongst the dancers.
And use your back, girls. Yes, last group.
But Mr. Van Damme seems to have an intense appreciation, doesn't he?
Are the girls ready? And...
Vivian walks alongside the high-kicking dancers.
He's practically sniffing.
And last group.
Some of these girls are very good.
Indeed.
I'm going to call our chorus the Millerettes.
Millerettes?
Mill as in windmill.
What's the er for?
What?
Millerettes should be Millettes. The er clogs it up.
Millettes doesn't scan.
But it's accurate.
But it doesn't sound right.
But Millerettes sounds like a man named Miller has a chorus line.
We're doing a vaudeville, not a dictionary.
There's still a place for correct English.
Millerettes is a good name, and it's not your decision. In fact, it's got nothing to do with you. In fact, you shouldn't be in the theatre until dress rehearsal. In fact, I'm going to ban
you. No, don't
I'm
you
going
dare
to ban
me.
You from all
you
auditions.
Have the right.
I can do anything I blank
out. Well, as can I. I shall cancel the opening.
Fine. This show will not go on.
Indeed.
They're ready to start again, V.
To Maggie.
My dear, you must never interrupt a perfectly good argument. I completely lost my train of thought.
So have I.
His arm.
Mustn't keep the Millerettes waiting.
Oh, that name is intolerable. It suggests midgets working in a factory.
Millette sounds like a medical condition.
A row of Millerettes in shining black and yellow costumes and black top hats over platinum wigs dance with beaming smiles. The opening night gala.
Can't you see that all the dull days and grey skies are over? Can't you see that we'll be living from now on in clover?
We're letting in the sunshine, it's shining everywhere. We're letting in the sunshine.
On stage, Bertie in black trousers and bolero with yellow braiding leads a troupe of dancers with Frank Larsen against a sunny backdrop. The pharaohs join them on stage and take a bow as Bertie, Frank and the leading lady in a Spanish flamenco-style dress link arms and kick their heels from side to side for the closing number. They all beam graciously as the curtains close. The audience rise for a standing ovation. Laura, who sits queen-like in a private box, is jubilant. She catches Vivian's eye and mouths, "Thank you, Mr. Van Damme." He mouths, "Thank you, Mrs. Henderson," and bows. Lady Cromwell sits
Jobber.
Beside Laura.
Let's buy some champagne. What a wonderful hobby, my dear. I wonder if there are any more theatres for sale.
The Millerettes dazzle. Sold-out reviews are pasted across posters for the Windmills reviews. A newspaper article reads, "Windmills smash Revue de Ville sweeps London." The Apollo and Globe Theatre start advertising continuous reviews. Seats available is pasted to a Windmill review poster.
I don't understand. We were such a success.
And then everyone copied us.
Now you're telling me we're a disaster.
There's the accounts. You're losing a fortune.
You mean in the show business you can be a triumph one week and a disaster the next?
I'm not certain it's worth going on.
Oh, you people make me weary. You've no courage. What I say is stick a thing out and it will come right.
I'm trying to save your finances.
I don't need your protection, thank you very much. You put on some good shows, but they're obviously not daring enough. Why don't we get rid of the clothes?
Pardon?
Let's have naked girls.
She smiles mischievously.
don't you think?
Now, this has been on my mind for some time. I never dared mention it. I too lack courage, it seems. Now, what I propose is that we have nude women in Revue de Ville, as they do in Paris. At our namesake, the Moulin Rouge, for instance. Oh, baby, it's all right. We'll find you some milk.
She leads Vivian through the theatre.
Paris, after all, is just filled with naked women wearing bananas, and dare I say it, making everyone else go bananas in return. Do keep up, Mr. Van Damme. It would be innovative and draw the crowds. I would make back all of my money. You, I imagine, would enjoy yourself being surrounded, as it were, by countless breasts, and we'd all be happy.
They walk across the stage.
What you're suggesting isn't possible. That kind of thing isn't done here. Nudity in England.
You tend towards safety sometimes, Mr. Van Damme. You're rather bourgeois. I do mean that in a kind way. But I suspect it's not advisable in the show business.
What you're forgetting is we need a license from the Lord Chamberlain for whatever we put on the stage. He'll never approve it.
The Lord Chamberlain?
Yes, the Lord Chamberlain.
Or Tommy, little Tommy Baring. Don't be silly. Well, I have, of course, taken that into account. He's a very sweet man. He and his rather dreary wife are on holiday in France, but as soon as he returns, I'll throw a fly at him.
Pardon?
That's a fisherman's term, dear. It has to do with hooking a trout. You do lead a narrow life. Meanwhile, do begin work on our marvellous new idea.
Without permission.
Oh, we found your milk.
The Lord Chamberlain's office.
Mrs. Henderson's request is, of course, entirely out of order.
Of course, I'm well aware of that.
The office door is opened.
Oh, Tommy!
Laura, how wonderful to see you.
You don't look a day older.
What a touching little lie. I do know a bit about why you're here, you know.
Oh?
I find that lines have to be drawn somewhere, my dear Laura, and nudity is on the wrong side of the divide. I have problems enough with the length of skirts. I've had to have inches added to them for the new Offenbach production.
Well, we won't have that problem, as we won't have skirts.
Tommy's speechless.
Sir, if I may, we have very strict rules in these areas, Mrs. Henderson.
Ah, this office is so stuffy. Why don't we take a bit of a walk?
Sir?
A walk, yes. Lovely.
Why didn't you return to India?
I was only ever Robert's wife in India. It seemed a bit absurd without a Robert. Now I find it most amusing to run a variety show, and I'll tell you why. Robert used to take me to music hall quite often. He was fond of them, on the condition that I stayed behind the curtain in the box and was never visible. In those days, it was considered terribly improper for a married woman to be seen at a music hall. But times have moved on, and we must move with them, mustn't we? Oh, look, a tent.
Tommy frowns.
It's unusual to see a tent in the park.
Quite so. I had it constructed this morning.
Did you obtain a license?
Oh, come inside, you old fogey. I prepared lunch.
The two sit at opposite sides of a small dining table.
But the be-all and end-all, finally, is that they are naked.
Like paintings in a museum. These sandwiches are particularly good. It's an excellent season for salmon.
We haven't exactly reached salmon season yet.
Tommy, you're so literal. You're thinking bosoms, but I'm thinking breasts.
And what, my dear, is the difference?
Are the differences in your soul. Cheese.
Thank you. Of course, paintings in a museum are still, are they not?
Still?
The figures do not move. I suppose there's something in there. This cheese is very good indeed. If the girls did not move...
Tableaus?
Precisely. Then one might make a direct corollary with an art gallery. I can perhaps see the possibility of some artistic merit.
They never move?
Never.
Yes, that would be like a museum.
Which was, my dear, your suggestions. You must be very pleased. I'm warming to the idea. My secretary, of course, will be appalled.
More wine, then?
Ah, yes, thank you. Now, what about, forgive me, the foliage?
Foliage?
You know, beneath the...
Beneath what? Try the brie.
Thank you. Beneath the...
Flown in from France.
Excellent. The foliage beneath
the... My husband was very fond of it.
Of what?
This particular cheese.
My dear, I am attempting to address the disagreeable and somewhat sordid topic of the pudendum.
What on earth is that?
Good heavens, woman!
Do you have some more wine?
The female part.
Oh, the pussy. Why didn't you say?
I had not expected you, of all people, to use such language.
That word was rather popular in the mid-19th century. Not everyone speaks Latin, you know.
Then I'd prefer you refer to it as the Midlands.
Oh, dear. You men do get into such a state about the Midlands, don't you? Well, you needn't worry. Our lighting will be so subtle... The disputed area will be barely visible.
And anyway, we'll have a barber.
Tommy's red wine splatters over his face.
You are the most exasperating woman, and you always were.
I take that to mean you'll permit us to have a go.
As long as no one moves. Yes, perhaps. I'll reserve final judgment until opening night.
At the windmill.
I'm delighted, dear ladies, that you all wish to be a part of our endeavour. Thank you very much.
A row of bare-chested girls are lined up across the stage. Vivian steps down into the auditorium, where Laura holds out a handkerchief to him.
Saliva.
Behave.
I've never realised how similar breasts are to shoes.
What do you mean?
Well, they come in so many sizes. I've always personally found them rather overrated myself.
Well, you're not a man.
Alas.
All right, ladies, off you go.
He twirls his finger round and sits down beside Bertie. Maggie leans through from the seat behind. The girls swan about the stage, displaying their breasts provocatively. Bertie leans towards Vivian.
What do you make of her?
She's beautiful.
Yes.
But the nipples?
Too large.
They're not British. Could be Italian. We must have British nipples.
Bertie's eyes alight on someone else.
And how about her?
The right one's bigger than the left.
A bemused Laura listens.
Her.
Fried eggs. Sorry.
Vivian stands up.
Thank you very much. Could you all please wait in the wings? Thank you.
So what basically are you looking for?
Personality. Something in their smile. Their eyes.
Well, I suggest you start looking in their faces.
Vivian swings round, wide-eyed.
Yes, of course. We're looking at the wrong kind of girl. We shouldn't have theatricals. Maggie, make a note.
My dear?
Bertie and I are going to tour the countryside and discover some English roses.
Oh, good. Now you're getting the hang of it.
Vivian drives Bertie through the pouring rain.
It's been an unsuccessful trip, my friend. What I'm looking for is personality, youth, beauty, certainly not talent. Anyone can have talent, and they must be well brought up. I think many of the young women we've been seeing come from rather awkward backgrounds.
The headlights shine through the darkness as a cyclist swerves in front of them. The cyclist, a girl, careers into a river. Bertie jumps into the river after the girl, while Vivian directs the car's headlights towards her before jumping out and hurrying to the bank.
Young fella's a dancer. Excellent coordination.
Bertie brings her to the bank. Vivian drags her out.
That's it. Come on. There we go. There you are.
Let me see.
Oh, my God.
She gets up.
I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed. I didn't mean to cause any trouble.
No need to be embarrassed. You found a knight. Hmm? Two knights in shining armor.
The girl smiles.
My God! What a beautiful smile.
Exquisite.
Soaked through, the girl brushes her blonde hair from her face.
Have you ever considered going on the stage?
The girl, Maureen, now in a dressing gown, stands statue-like with other muses on the windmill stage.
Sweet inspiration, so often out of reach. Da,
da, da, da. The singer, Jane, wafts amongst the statues. One of the muses lowers her arm. Vivian, who's watching from the auditorium, stands up frustratedly.
We often have
Peggy moved.
You moved.
She mustn't move.
I'm sorry, Mr. Van Damme.
The law insists that you be absolutely still.
Why don't we take a break?
Yes, good idea.
Rest your arms, girls. Get the circulation going.
Bertie helps the girls down off the chairs they're standing on.
There's teacups and
three.
Tea just downstairs.
Laura finds the girls taking a break.
Oh, it's so sweet. You're perched in the orchestra pit like little birds.
It feels safe down here.
Are you all right?
Oh, yes, thank you. My arm went numb.
I would sometimes see people in India standing still for hours on end, my dear. They were called fakirs. It was all rather spiritual.
Oh, I see.
You must think yourself onto a higher plane.
We'd all like to be on a higher plane now, Mrs. Henderson. Preferably flying over the channel.
Laura joins in the laughter.
Oh, you're the one that was
drowning.
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh,
I like that girl you ran over.
Why don't you and the dog have a look at the program proofs in the office?
You're trying to get rid of us.
Yes, we're coming up to a delicate time.
All the more reason for a motherly
Maggie,
presence.
Take Mrs. Henderson up to the office.
Oh!
Out!
Well, of course. You're in charge.
The girls take up their positions on stage.
Right. Time for you to disrobe.
Do we have to do it now, Mr. Van Damme?
Well, when else?
I was just asking.
Should have left you in the water.
Come on, girls, let's do it.
The girls reluctantly go to disrobe. With nervous fingers, the belts around their silken robes are loosened and fall open. One dark-haired girl, Doris, hesitates, then pulls her robe more tightly around her.
I can't.
She rushes off stage.
Where's she going?
She can't face it.
Frances reties her belt and follows Doris out. Vera and Peggy hurry out after them.
What's wrong with everybody?
I'm sorry, Mr. Van Damme.
Maureen follows the others.
There's no work outside. I just thought, well, it's a job. All of my friends are starving. I was lucky to have employment.
You can't imagine what it feels like. We're just standing there.
Well, even my boyfriend has seen me naked. And we've been to bed and everything.
It's like it's medical.
Do you think I would ever subject you to anything improper or tawdry? I am enabling you to earn an honest salary in this most difficult of times. After a hard week's work, you can take home enough to maintain your home, help out your parents, and even save a little bit for the future. And all you have to do is display certain blessings you receive from the Lord. Why do you think God gave you all your bits and pieces? So that you might be ashamed of them? So that you might hide them away? Isn't great art, after all, the celebration of nature? And that's what this is.
Art?
Absolutely. You are the Venus de Milo, the Mona Lisa.
The Mona Lisa wore a dress.
Some do, some don't. Tomorrow, you'll go to the museum and look at some paintings. Botticelli. Now, he was inspired. Inspired by God. If I'm placing a weighty burden on your shoulders, then I know you have the moral strength to carry it. Why don't we try it again? All right?
He heads out.
I'll see you on stage.
Maureen looks at the others.
Come on, girls, let's give it a go. I don't fancy working in my father's chemist.
Back on stage.
Art. Art.
Peggy sniffles into a handkerchief.
Actually, there is a draft in here, Mr. Van Damme.
Well, you expect that in a theatre. You expect drafts.
But what happens if we catch cold?
Bertie, get someone to close the doors and check all the windows, will you? Thank you. All right?
Yes, thank you.
Does everyone have to watch us?
Who?
Well, them.
Doris gestures to a couple of stagehands.
You're going to have an entire audience watching you.
Yes, but they'll be strangers. They won't be standing so close. Will they?
We can hear them breathing.
Man has to breathe.
Heavy breathing.
After all, it doesn't seem fair for them to be dressed when we're not.
Okie doke. I know what to do.
Bertie grabs the stagehands.
Come on, gentlemen. What? Come on, hey. You too.
Hey.
What? What? Fair is fair.
Oh, well,
I'll make the ladies comfortable.
To Vivian's amazement, Bertie undresses.
Come on.
The other men reluctantly start to undress. Vivian laughs.
You too, Mr. Van Damme.
Don't be ridiculous. Someone has to maintain authority here.
Take your clothes off, please.
No.
Vivian in the auditorium gets to his feet.
All right!
Maggie follows Laura to the auditorium. Laura steams ahead. The cast and crew stand naked on stage. They freeze on seeing Laura, who's clutching Gilpin. She gazes at them in surprise, then turns to Vivian, who's also Starkers.
Why, Mr. Van Damme? You are Jewish.
Opening night. A spotlight's on Jane, who's in a long white gown on the stage.
Sweet inspiration, so often out of reach. You come sometime to each and every one.
Jane glides towards a large gold picture frame on a plinth and waves her arm in front of it. One of the girls appears, naked and absolutely still, in the center of the frame. Jane moves to another frame, then another. Statuesque nude women appear in each, holding classical poses. She steps up to a fourth frame, and another nude muse appears holding an artist's palette coyly in front of her. Each nude looks like a marble statue against a blue background. The audience in formal attire stare solemnly. Tommy, Lord Cromer, who sits with Laura in her private box, begins to clap. In the changing room...
In the audience.
Stop it, you're hallucinating! Everyone looks so rich.
Oh, I hope so. When I take off my clothes, I close my eyes and think this will bring me champagne.
I think one more day and it hasn't happened yet.
The girls are in a state of undress.
I brought the Lord Chamberlain. He felt he had to say a few words of encouragement to you. Now, isn't that delicious?
Well done. Well done. May I be permitted to say that... Oh, good heavens. Good heavens, I...
He sees two bottoms reflected in a mirror.
What an artistic enterprise. You have, a testament, really, to the British pearl of...
It's a magical evening. Hmm?
Lady Conway is with the girls.
I quite understand what you were feeling. I myself have exhibited my breasts. I was at a party in Antibes with the Duchess of Denby and Countess Borway, and we took off our blouses, in private, of course, and looked at each other's titties. My, how we laughed!
Laura approaches Maureen.
The Lord Chamberlain was very taken with you, my dear.
Vivian leads a well-dressed, middle-aged woman towards Laura.
Mrs. Henderson.
Mr. Van Damme, we've had quite an evening. The Lord Chamberlain was very pleased.
I wanted you to meet Natalie.
Natalie?
My wife.
Vivian's spoken about you so often, I just feel I know you.
Laura looks totally taken aback.
Well, I certainly don't know you. Excuse me.
Wearing a flowing blue silk kimono with gold leaf pattern over a blue dress, Laura marches off. A heavy-hearted Laura steps down into the deserted foyer. Vivian appears.
You can be rude to me, but not to my wife.
What wife? When did you acquire a wife? Why haven't you told us?
What do you mean?
You never mentioned her.
I believe a figure of authority must maintain a sense of privacy.
Good heavens, a wife.
What exactly is the problem?
Well, who on earth said there was a problem? Fine, have a wife if you insist. Just don't let her interfere with any of your duties.
Why would she do that?
Because that's what wives do. That's their purpose. I know. I was a wife. I interfered all the time.
So sack me then. If you're unhappy with me, just say it and I'll leave. But don't you dare ever, ever talk to my wife like that again.
Oh, don't you worry. I'll keep my eye on you.
You do that.
He turns to go.
I hope you realize I will never, ever, ever set foot in this theater again.
He goes. Lady Conway appears.
You two behave like an old married couple. But it seems that would make him a bigamist. Oh. Champagne, then.
Laura shakes her head.
It is rather as I thought. Your heart has stirred. Then I must consult a physician. This should have been such a pleasant night.
She hangs her head, then goes outside. Laura stands on the street with a neon-lit windmill sign and review details behind her.
You told me there wasn't a lesson in loving that you hadn't learned.
Jane stands on stage in the spotlight. The Millerettes step forward wearing swimsuits and caps and carrying large beach balls.
So you met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. So you met someone and now you know how it feels. Goody, goody. So you gave her your heart too, just as I gave mine to you.
Lengths of blue muslin are raised to create waves around Bertie and the boys. Backstage, Maureen, who wears a feathered headdress as Pocahontas, rehearses for a Hiawatha tableau. Vivian consults a photo.
Now I want you to flank her.
Flank her?
Stand either side of her.
Oh,
aren't I in silhouette, like in the picture?
Silhouette.
Silhouette, Harry.
Now the sun must rise behind you.
Orange.
We see the rays of the sun, like in the picture.
A golden sunlight.
A new dawn over the new world.
On stage, Maureen, wearing only the feathered headdress, sits on a mountaintop plinth flanked by two other nudes. The rest of the troupe is Native Americans, dance in front of a wigwam. Frank's dressed as a brave.
Goody, goody. Goody, goody.
The Millerettes dance around him.
Goody, goody.
Jane as Annie Oakley.
And now...
How?
Do you do? So you lie awake just singing the blues all night. Goody, goody.
Series of extravagant nude tableaus follows. A silvery fountain, a Lalique lady tableau, an under-the-sea vision with the Millerettes as mermaids wearing long platinum wigs. A large clamshell opens to reveal Maureen, posed with her hand held coyly over the Midlands. A harp tableau with Peggy and Vera, naked, balanced against it, like a ship's figurehead. Bertie and another Millerette perform ballet around them. Three students sitting in the packed auditorium shift about mischievously. One leaves his seat, creeps up to the stage and releases a white mouse onto it. The mouse scuttles across it. Peggy spots it and screams. Pandemonium as Peggy runs from her post with her breasts jiggling about and flashing her bottom. Two stagehands run on to cover her up and catch the mouse. The audience cheer, stand and clap uproariously. Vivian hauls the students from their seats. The audience protest as the curtains close on the butt-naked chaos.
How am I going to explain this to Lord Chamberlain?
A razzle-dazzle finale. The Millerettes in shimmering black and gold costumes and top hats. Jane resplendent in black and gold gown.
Hooray and hallelujah, you have it coming to ya. Goody goody for you.
Bertie.
Goody goody for me. And I hope you're satisfied, you rascal you.
Bertie in black tails and gold waistcoat takes Jane's hand and leads her back towards a New York backdrop. And Maureen, who stands on a plinth, as a partly nude Statue of Liberty. American flags are suspended over the stage. The curtains close. When they open, men from the back clamber through the audience to some of the newly vacated seats at the front. Backstage, the stagehand makes his way past Vivian with some beach balls.
Coming through. Excuse me, Mr. Van Damme. Sorry.
I forgot my thing.
Had a lot to be charged in there. Good afternoon, Doris.
Afternoon.
How's your mother?
Oh, she's fine, thank you.
Have you been writing to her every
yes,
week?
Yes, Mr. Van Damme. She told me to tell you that she's very disappointed that I'm a starfish. She thinks I should be a mermaid.
Ah, I'll send her a note.
Maureen in elaborate wig.
And who have we here?
Catherine the Great. Ah. Have you forgotten the tableau with the horse? Come along, Mr. Van Damme. Wakey, wakey.
You might show a bit more respect. I think I should have left
you in the water.
Yes.
Afternoon, girls. How are you?
Better now, Mr. Van Damme.
Something wrong?
My bum cheeks went numb.
She was leaning arse over backwards.
Shush. Well, in the Alaskan tableau, of course.
All that ice.
But Rupert soon got the blood flowing.
Who's Rupert?
Well, you might ask.
Oh, behave yourself.
We must be cautious about too much frivolity. The windmill is a very serious business.
Yes, Mr. Van Damme.
Dressed as mermaids, they hurry away. Vivian discreetly hands the white mouse to a stagehand.
Do I give it to the students again, sir?
Mr. Van Damme.
At your own discretion, dear boy.
It's beastly. I can't walk into my own theatre. I hear the most wonderful things about the new performances, and I'm missing all the fun.
Well, you did say that you would never step foot in the windmill again.
Quite right. The man's a monster. I want nothing to do with him.
You're very much like my granddaughter, who moans about the boy she has her eye on. Adolescents and women in their eighth decade are strikingly similar. You obviously require a battle plan. My second husband, the general, always advocated attacking from the rear, which, although it did nothing to enhance our marriage, did bring him some success on the field. It would just slip in there, as it were, and establish your beachhead.
Laura, cloaked in black, creeps backstage at the windmill and enters a dressing room.
Excuse us, this is a private dressing room.
Tilly, me. I'm sorry, but I did not want to be seen in the theatre.
She removes her cloak.
I have missed your company. I thought I'd just drop by to see if you needed anything. Actually, if this may be our secret, Mr. What's his name? Doesn't know I'm here.
We're fine, thank you, Mrs. Henderson.
My poor dear, I'm having some cheese sent up to you.
Cheese?
Well, I'm not convinced you're eating enough.
Yes, it's terribly sad. She's just skin and bones.
Shut up. I weigh exactly what I weighed the day I started this job. I'm an ounce less.
Something's wrong with her. She's not eating chocolate truffles.
She's a very, very head girl.
Mm, so sensible.
Well, you see, it's unanimous. You're positively scrawny. But you may laugh, but I know men. Men look at bosoms, my dear, but I notice bones.
What? Sports.
No one will notice.
Now, you must promise to let me know if you have any complaints or problems. I mean, does Mr. Van Damme... Oh, my dear. I wore a similar wig to a ball in Delhi. Didn't look nearly as becoming as it does on you.
Thank you, Mrs. Henderson.
You know, you remind me a bit of myself at that time.
Not too thin.
You'd be surprised. Now, remember not to tell anyone I've been here.
Of course not. It's just between us girls.
You all get on rather well, don't you?
Yes, we're like a family.
There hasn't been any improper behaviour, has there? From Mr. Van Damme, that is.
Oh, he's very good to us, Mrs. Henderson. He's like a father, if fathers were nice.
He treats us as what we are.
And what is that?
Artists.
I have seemingly handed him a kingdom, complete with harem.
Then, my dear, you must infiltrate like a delicious, if overripe, Matahari. Might I propose subterfuge?
Vivian's in the lobby. He's greeting customers. A pigtail Chinese matron bows and walks past.
Good afternoon.
Vivian steps up to Maggie.
Amazing. We get all kinds.
I have a very odd feeling, VD.
Laura's disguised as the pigtail Chinese
what I really
matron.
Need is a rubber trumpet. Yeah.
Vivian hauls her out of her seat.
Oh. Oh. Please, no. Oh, please don't do this.
Mrs. Henderson, you are a fraud.
He yanks her long black pigtail off as he ushers her towards his office. Yeah.
Make a fool of yourself,
no,
if you must.
Mr. Van Damme!
Not of me!
No.
What on earth do you think you were doing?
I simply want to make sure you're doing your jobs properly. It was most unpleasant of you to grab my hairpiece. That's
he hands it back.
Authentic Chinese hair!
Well, now you'll have some time. Calm down. Examine your behaviour.
My husband put me on top of a cupboard once. You have so much in common.
Vivian's put her on top of his filing cabinet.
I'd like you to behave. No doubt your husband said that to you as well.
Oh, Mr. Van Damme. I just can't help myself.
Hmm. Well, cheer me up then.
No, don't you dare leave me here. No, don't you dare! Don't you dare leave me!
A sign outside the auditorium reads, auditions. Inside, Vivian and Bertie sit and watch someone in a polar bear costume do a simple little dance routine to piano accompaniment.
This act's not half bad.
On stage, the bear twirls, waves its arms, then holds them aloft for the finale. Vivian, with fat cigar perched between his fingers, stands up.
Thank you. Very much.
Oh.
The bear bows. Bertie turns to Vivian.
You can't have an animal on stage with naked women.
Yes, I see that. It's a shame.
I've got the new song.
Let's hear it.
Bertie leaps on stage.
There's a lake in the park, there's a house by the lake, there's a... Slower.
Backstage, Ambrose ushers the polar bear down some steps and passes Maggie.
There's a lake in the park. There's a house by the lake. There's a girl
Maggie
in the
hurries
house
onto the stage
the
and down some
park,
steps
and
to the auditorium.
The house in the park by the lake is the girl in the little green hat. And tonight after eight, that's when I've got to date. When the moon's riding high and the stars light the sky with the girl in the house.
Maggie scurries
lake,
up to Vivian and whispers in his ear.
You better see for yourself.
Vivian stands up and rushes out.
But she'll wait beside the lake, I'll be welcome at the house, I'll meet her by the garden wall. There's a ship on the shore.
While Bertie dances on stage, outside, Ambrose leads the polar bear to a maroon Rolls Royce and holds the back door open. Three of the Millerettes pass. The polar bear waves and the girls hurry on across the street towards the cafe. Vivian steps out of the windmill with Maggie, just as the Rolls is driving away. The polar bear looks out the window and waves its furry paw. Maggie leans towards Vivian.
Try the river. It's Tuesday.
Get me a taxi.
Yes, baby.
Vivian spots Maureen and two others in the cafe.
Yes, please. To take away.
We need a lot of caffeine. We're exhausted.
You're exhausted.
Jane's
all
behind
you
them.
Girls do is just stand there.
And that, I'm told, is the definition of a star.
Vivian runs along a riverbank to catch up with Laura, who's rowing a boat. Two skiffs directed by a cox with a megaphone follow close behind. Vivian calls out.
This has got to stop. They're running a serious theatre. The entire West End is laughing at us.
I haven't worked for years to achieve a position of respect, only to be perceived as a joke. If all you want to be is a dilettante, take your money and go someplace else.
I can't hear you.
Vivian fumes. Later, Ambrose helps Laura out of the boat. She turns to Vivian.
I'm not simply frivolous, you know. And I don't ever, ever want to be taken for granted. Actually, I wish to ascertain that artists who audition for us are being treated with proper respect. It turns out they are. I'm perfectly satisfied.
She walks towards her roles.
On another matter entirely, I was thinking about billing. The programme says Mrs. Henderson presents Revue de Ville. It's absolutely charming, but perhaps unfair. Shouldn't it be Mrs. Henderson presents Revue de Ville, a Vivian Van Damme production? I rather like that, don't you?
She steps towards the car.
I'm going to have a joy right now. Isn't that exciting?
She gets in. Ambrose grins mischievously at Vivian. Laura sits in the back seat of a biplane. Vivian stands helplessly in the small airfield as the plane takes off.
I'm not a servant! You can't buy me off with a piece of billing! You hear, bloody woman?
Laura, with the collar of her luxurious fur coat pulled snugly around her neck, and wearing goggles and a brown leather flying helmet, waves to him as the little plane soars into the sky. Laura looks down at the green countryside below, then queries the young pilot.
Is it well stocked with petrol?
What do you mean?
Do you think we might make it to France?
The pilot looks back at her and grins. Laura's back at the British War Cemetery in northern France. She stands in a path of light by her son's grave and gazes down upon it. All about her is tranquil and still as she pulls a handkerchief from her sleeve and dusts down the top of the pale grey tombstone. When finished, she tucks the handkerchief up her sleeve again. Steeling herself, she walks quickly away. The pilot sits quietly in his cockpit waiting for her. He turns round as Laura approaches.
I don't think I'll be back for a while.
The pilot hauls himself out of the cockpit as Laura gazes back sadly at the cemetery and the last resting place of her son, Alec Henderson, Captain, 1894 to 1915, aged 21 years. The pilot spins the propeller. The little biplane flies back over the grey English Channel towards dark, ominous clouds. A newspaper headline flashes, Hitler invades France. Black and white newsreel footage of the fall of France. Huge explosions erupt from its ancient buildings. A squadron of aircraft overhead. A tank lifts off the ground as it explodes. Clouds of dust and debris. German officers striding towards the Eiffel Tower. Citizens fleeing along the streets. Hitler. Laura sits in a cinema and solemnly watches the footage unfold. Columns of German soldiers march past the monumental Arc de Triomphe. Laura returns to the windmill. As she steps into the lobby, she's greeted by Vivian and Maggie.
Mr. Van Damme. Mrs. Henderson.
Welcome back.
She enters the auditorium for a programme which reads, Eric Woodburn, in a tribute to our French cousins, The Birth of the Marseillaise. Mr. Woodburn, dressed in the fashion of the 1790s French Revolution with a white curly wig, stands on stage with a silhouette of rooftops behind him. The audience watch and listen intently, some with tears in their eyes. As Mr. Woodburn finishes with an upright fist, a tableau with three of the Millerettes is illuminated behind him. They're naked, but modestly draped in red, blue and white sashes. A French flag flutters above them. Laura watches from her private box, visibly moved with tears welling in her eyes. Laura quietly enters the office. The room is dimly lit by a small desk lamp. Vivian sits by a window in the shadows, shoulders slumped, despondent. A glass of whiskey rests on a table in front of him. Laura glances at a newspaper lying on the desk. Its headline, Nazis Round Up Dutch Jews. Laura picks up a glass and a bottle of whiskey and steps up to Vivian. She stands in front of him.
Do you mind if I sit here for a while?
Suit yourself.
He doesn't look up. Laura sits down and pours herself a whiskey. She sets the bottle down and sits back. She studies Vivian's intense, grave face for several moments.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Van Damme. I imagine you have family.
Vivian looks up and stares into her eyes.
Yes.
I can't bear feeling helpless. I always think there's something I can do. Sometimes, of course, there's nothing.
Vivian's anguished eyes flicker. His steely intensity softens momentarily. He looks unsure and lost. His eyes drift sadly down, then his jaw tightens as his inner despair is quietly contained. A bored Laura sits listening to a string quartet at a garden party. Resplendent in brown fur and jewels, she glances round her. She spots Lord Cromer in black tails with grey trousers and waistcoat, walking alone along a terrace by a grey stately mansion, and makes a beeline for him. He stops and turns to face her.
Don't you feel a bit oversafe?
Caution, my dear, caution.
They walk on.
No, we're not certain what to do about the theatres.
Whatever do you mean?
They're a frivolous distraction.
Exactly what young soldiers need, wouldn't you say?
They walk past a table laden with champagne.
There are other considerations. Our intelligence tells us the Luftwaffe will bomb London.
My dear, my intelligence tells me that.
But then it would be dangerous for people to congregate, won't it?
Oh, Tommy, don't be silly. Congregate underground? Remember, my theatre is beneath street level. It's the safest place to be. Now, let's have no more of these foolish ideas.
She smacks his arm.
Oh, Tommy.
People hurry into Piccadilly Circus underground station in the gloomy darkness. Black and white footage captures a squadron of fighter planes above the clouds. The German Luftwaffe head towards Britain. An anti-aircraft gun is directed towards the sky. Searchlights scan the darkness. On the ground, spasmodic explosions as London is bombed. The silhouette of St. Paul's is highlighted against a burst of light.
We stand in awe and ask what power defines.
At the Windmill Theatre, Bertie's on stage, dressed as an archaeologist in front of a tableau of the Acropolis, with the minarets posing as figures on a Greek frieze.
In every curve and line,
outside, London is blitzed. Fires rage and walls collapse where buildings have been bombed. Huge clouds of smoke billow into the night. A tense Laura sits in her private box watching the show. Bertie stops singing as the floor beneath him shakes. The lights flicker. The girls on stage look nervous. Bertie continues.
No space of endless years.
The auditorium is plunged temporarily into darkness as the theatre shakes. A cascade of dust falls down from the flies. People cower in their seats. Bertie and the Millerettes crouch down. As the stage is once again illuminated, the audience slowly raise their heads. Maureen, with her blonde hair curled and styled in a Grecian fashion, and wearing a shimmering sheath of fabric slung loosely over one breast, steps forward and strikes a pose, boldly giving the two-fingered gesture. Laura begins to clap. The audience stand to applaud as Maureen defiantly holds the pose. The other girls return to their places on stage. Maureen slowly and gracefully adjusts her arms to once again strike the pose of a Grecian muse. Maureen closes her eyes, overcome by the moment. Footage of Londoners walking along derelict streets.
Londoners awoke after the 10th consecutive night of bombardments by the German Air Force.
Vivian addresses the company.
We have a huge challenge before us. It's up to us, Revue de Ville, to fortify London in a way that sandbags and anti-aircraft cannot do. They may bomb our city,
destroy our homes, kill our friends and neighbors. But through it all, our show will continue. We will never stop performing, and we will never close.
He thinks he's bloody Winston Churchill.
Maureen sniggers.
Some of our family are going, called up.
A woman squeezes a man's shoulder.
Thank God our Bertie has a heart murmur.
Bertie casts his eyes down.
It may be wise for some of you to move into the theatre. We have room, and because we're underground, we're safe. Of course, we'll all have our war duties as well as theatrical ones. But we will pitch in, and we will do our bit.
That was beautifully put, Mr. Van Damme. I'm sure we will all make the necessary sacrifices. Yesterday I wanted to buy a new hat. I desisted. I put the money in national savings instead.
Vivian smiles.
We shall come through.
The Deering sisters in army coats and hats step onto the stage.
Poor old London town is falling down. Lots of places going up in flames. But if you're in the know and find out where to go, you'll find the lovelies very much the same.
They throw their hats into the audience and shake their hair free.
We're babies of the Blitz. Our boudoir was blown to bits. We're living underground and overdrumming on our wits.
Below them, the Millerettes move their things into the basement dressing room.
Catching canteen cakes. The nightfall doesn't ruffle us, but we've got what it takes. It's no longer safe to tarry at Cafe de Paris. So we're ladies in waiting now to do our little bits.
On stage, the sisters remove their coats to reveal stylish scarlet dresses.
Keep the old flag flying with a row of babies off the Blitz.
In the dressing room, the girls are cramped together, sleeping side by side on mattresses.
For a while, then shelter boots conceal our dainty feet. But need the tough external, there's something that's eternal. Ask the Air Force,
or the Army, or the Fleet.
The Deerings are joined on stage by three of the Millerettes, who wear mini army coats which reveal the top of their black stockings and suspenders. They sashay sexily behind the sisters, then crouch down behind a stack of sandbags to re-emerge, minus their coats, in strapless black and hot pink can-can dresses. Meanwhile, in the basement, the girls fill sandbags and bandage a volunteer. In the dressing room, one girl dons a gas mask and hurries up the stairs. On the stage, curtains draw apart behind the Deerings and the can-can dancers to reveal four of the Millerettes nude, posing in front of a backdrop of London. The audience of servicemen erupts with enthusiasm. London at night. Searchlights scan the sky. Bombs explode in the distance. Here and there, fires blaze. Laura stands on the roof of the Windmill Theatre watching the sky, calmly surveying the scene. Looking like a ghostly apparition in the darkness, Laura rests her chin on her hand and stares ahead. Vivian steps out onto the roof. A door closes behind him.
Ken said you were up here. I didn't believe him.
Why ever not?
It's bloody dangerous, that's why. Come on down.
Oh dear, oh dear. The aircraft have passed. Look, you can see them over the East End. You're ever so cautious, Mr. Van Damme. One shouldn't be overly, sir, at times like these.
Everyone should be cautious.
He turns in alarm to look at the site of the latest bomb blast. He sighs and turns back to Laura, who is unmoved.
You don't seem to take war too seriously, Mrs. Henderson.
Laura glances at him.
I wonder what you were like when you were young. Rather dashing, I dare say. And filled with hope. My mind turns towards young men these days. You see, Mr. Van Damme, I take war far more seriously than you can ever dare imagine.
Vivian looks at her, listening intently. Laura's gaze is cast ahead. Finally, Vivian turns and heads back inside. Scores of young servicemen have gathered about the windmill stage door, waiting for the girls to come out Laura sits watching from her Rolls Royce. Finally, the door opens, and two girls, gorgeous in fashionable hats and coats, step out into the chill air. The men respond appreciatively. The girls give radiant smiles and linger in the light of the doorway, then step out into the crowd and begin to sign programs for the boys. The girls walk on, unknowingly passing Laura, whose car lurks in the shadows. On stage, the girls rehearse a fan dance with Maury kneeling center stage.
That's all blue nightfall above me.
The girls wave their fans.
Bring me that someone to love me.
No, you'll have to cover her faster than that.
You need to be a lot faster.
Those things weigh a ton, Bertie.
Go on, take 5 minutes.
The girls stand up and walk off stage.
No. I just can't lift it.
Maureen hands Laura a cup in the auditorium.
Oh, my dear, how generous.
Maureen sits behind her. Laura sips.
My goodness.
Gin. Help steal our nerves for the air raids.
It does seem they're no longer bombing during the tableaus.
Well, that's because Mr. Van Damme sent Hitler our program. Professional courtesy between Führers.
You're all so energetic and courageous. We're the only theatre still playing in the West End. Then you all go out with the soldiers after the show. It's admirable.
Oh, but I don't.
Laura's surprised.
Well, I never go out.
My dear, why ever not?
Before I started stripping off for a living, I was always falling in love. I was hopeless.
She gazes ahead.
Never again.
She shakes her head.
So I've become a right little priss. A naked spinster. And that's the way I like it.
She smiles to herself.
Who would have dreamed that standing on a stage without any clothes on would be the safest place to be?
On stage, the blue fan dance.
Then deep in my arms, what can he say but yes?
Jane singing.
That's all blue nightfall above me.
The fans wave, providing scintillating glimpses of a nude Maureen. Laura watches from her private box. The audience, again filled with servicemen, love the show. Later, the stage door opens and a couple of girls step out into the crowd. One serviceman, Paul, stands to one side, holding a red rose in his hand. Ambrose approaches the young man.
Could you come this way, sir? Mrs. Henderson, I'd like to speak to you.
The young man follows Ambrose to Mrs. Henderson's Rolls Royce. He peers in through a back window to see Laura's silhouette in the darkness.
Who's the flower for?
The girl inside the fan.
Speak up, dear.
The girl in the fan.
Oh, yes. How old are you?
21.
21?
Too young for her, I suppose.
Come back tomorrow night.
She suddenly leans forward to stroke his hand. Her face is illuminated.
Sweet.
He smiles and nods. The following night, some of the girls read the cards accompanying bouquets of flowers in the dressing room.
I was always afraid that someday I'd end up working in a florist shop.
And now you are. I'm getting hay fever.
And who is Paul?
I have no idea.
Are you girls decent?
Laura steps in.
Oh, good. I brought someone. This is Paul.
Oh, I see. Girls, can you,
She gestures the other girls to go. They collect their handbags, and glancing at Paul and Mrs. Henderson, they step outside, but hover in the doorway to look back in. The very young-looking Paul steps up nervously to Maureen.
I was looking forward to...
Speak up here.
Would you mind if I had a moment alone? Thank you.
She closes the door behind Paul.
You've sent all these flowers.
Don't be foolish, my dear.
I recognise the name of your florist. He can't afford this sort of thing.
Actually, he comes from a very distinguished family.
Mrs. Henderson.
Well, truth is so prosaic. He's young, that's all. And rather well put together, wouldn't you say? That face.
Her smile fades sadly as she looks at Maureen.
He's young. And in 5 days he goes to the front.
And he may not come back. And it's so lonely out there and...
Trenches.
Yes, I know the word. Books have been written about the last war, Mrs. Henderson. I have actually read some of them. And I suppose he saw me on stage and fell in love. Mrs. Henderson, one night my bicycle went off the road, and the next thing I knew, I was an illusion. Because that's all we are up there. But the odd thing is, I'm still in that river, and I want to be rescued, but not by some drum roll or applause or a soldier's fantasy.
Oh, dear. You're such a tiresome generation. You all want love. We got along very nicely without it, thank you very much. I don't see why that boy's fantasy is any more foolish than yours.
Maureen turns and opens the door to show Laura out, but sees the young, sweet face of Paul standing in the doorway looking at her.
Oh, damn.
Laura brings him in.
She loved your flowers, dear.
What flowers?
Laura steps out and closes the door behind her. The windmill stage door opens, and Maureen and Paul step outside. The other servicemen gathered there begin to cheer and clap.
You are the promised kiss of springtime that
Laura sits in the darkness of her car and watches the young couple. Maureen and Paul gaze into each other's eyes and dance in a serviceman's canteen. Maureen rests her cheek against his. Laura stands in front of a mirror at home, illuminated by several candles placed along a mantelpiece. She gracefully waves a large feathered fan about in front of her naked shoulders. Maureen and Paul run along a deserted, gloomy street and pause to hold each other and kiss.
My happy arms will hold you.
Laura gazes longingly at her reflection in the mirror as she passes the fan over her body. Maureen runs past the windmill alone, passing a billboard with her image on it.
All the things you are mine.
Bertie, in a tuxedo, stands on the windmill stage and sings. He steps out of the spotlight into the shadows, so that only his silhouette is visible, walking across the stage.
Finding your love, I found my adventure.
He steps back into the light.
Faster. All that I want in all of this world is you. You are the angel glow that lights.
A large Art Deco lamp is lit behind him, with Maureen, nude, draped along its stand. Maureen, with tears in her eyes, waves goodbye to Paul as he is driven away in an army truck. She stands for several moments to watch the truck disappear. Other girls beside her turn round and walk into the theatre.
I'll know that moment divine when all the things you are.
Maureen hangs her head and slowly walks back inside. In her home, Laura flutters the fan down her face. Maggie bursts into Vivian's office.
Trouble, boss.
She steps up to him and hands him a note.
Is it that bloody woman again?
Oh, no, not this time, Dee Dee.
That's the last of the cost.
Open up! Do you want me to knock the door down?
Come on. You'll hurt your shoulder.
Get inside.
Vivian follows Maureen into the dressing room.
You can't do this.
Why not?
You're part of our family.
That's a terrible choice of words.
What are you talking about?
I don't want to discuss it, Mr. Van Damme.
But you have to tell me what's behind this. You owe it to me.
My concern for the aesthetics of Revue de Ville.
What?
She turns to him.
I don't think you want a nude on stage who is pregnant.
The other girls enter.
Oh, Christ.
Excuse me.
We were having a private discussion.
We have a quick change.
Yes.
Vivian heads out while the girls sit down in front of their makeup mirrors. Mrs. Henderson finds Vivian pacing the corridor.
That was a particularly fine programme, Mr. Van Damme. I'm so very pleased with myself for recognising your latent talent. However, I do have a couple of notes about the comedy routine.
We have a crisis.
Why? Whatever's wrong?
Maureen's just sent me a letter of resignation.
Don't be ridiculous. Why would she?
Because she's pregnant.
2 minutes, girls!
Oh, my dear. I need some air.
Look. You can work in the show as a singer for the next few months. We'll keep you on salary until you...
I can't think clearly. I simply need some air.
I'm so sorry. Was it?
Well, who else would it be?
He sent me a letter after he's demobbed. He's going back to his girlfriend. His girlfriend. They all have girlfriends. Crazy thing is, I fell for him. Oh, it's not your fault. I'm a grown girl. I knew what I was doing.
He had such a sweet face.
They all have sweet faces. You live in your own world, Mrs. Henderson. I'm sorry. Excuse me. I don't want to say something I shouldn't. I need some tea and some air.
She said it's not your fault. That can only mean one thing.
Which is?
That it is your fault. What have you been up to?
Nothing.
Have you been giving her advice?
I don't like these questions. Excuse me, Mr. Van Damme. I want to take some air as well.
You can't go out, Mrs. Henderson. Sirens went.
We didn't hear anything.
A few minutes ago.
Maureen's got out.
Who went?
Just now.
Why didn't you stop her?
They hurry out.
Where's she going?
For some air.
No, to tea, she said.
Nothing but blackness. After several moments, smoky gloom. A shaft of light falls on the crumbling remains of a building. A line of people pass blocks of masonry from one to the other. Firemen carry a hose over the smouldering debris. Vivian walks in front of Bertie, who carries Maureen's body out of the rubble, and up to a small group of the girls who have gathered around in shock, comforting each other. Maureen's head hangs limply over Bertie's arm. Vivian reaches out and touches her blonde hair. Laura stands apart by a wall, grief-stricken. Bertie carries Maureen to the theatre and sets her down gently on the ground in front of the entrance. Vivian raises his eyes to look at Laura, then marches over to confront her.
You foolish, foolish woman. Look what you've done. I thought, yes, well, she's selfish and rude and eccentric, but that goes with her class. I can live with that. I was a fool. You don't know anything about the real world, do you?
With eyes welling with tears, Laura meets his gaze and listens. Vivian turns his back on her and walks away. Silent and helpless, Laura watches him go. Peggy, Vera, Frances, and Doris sit along a row at their dressing tables in silence. Light bulbs surround each makeup mirror in front of them. Each of the girls looks desolate, lost in her own thoughts. Flowers, jewellery, feathers, a makeup case, jars and boxes of lotions, cards and photographs adorn each personal space. The light bulbs around Maureen's mirror are switched off. Her dressing table is clear except for a hairbrush and a postcard. Just a small photo of her, pushed into the frame of the mirror. The river's enveloped in a dark mist, where Laura sits in a rowboat alone, gripping the oars but allowing the boat to drift. Overhead there's a window of light through a break in the grey clouds. Vivian stands behind the audience watching Jane and the girls perform the blue fan dance.
Tropical charms, lend us your loveliness.
To Maggie.
It's not the same. Let's cut the number.
The boys love it, boss.
Lord Cromer's secretary approaches Vivian.
Mr. Van Damme.
Yes.
I'm from the Lord Chamberlain's office. This is for you. You have to close your theatre.
What?
It's causing too many people to congregate in front of it. Sorry.
Vivian takes Maggie aside.
Telephone the newspapers. Get them down here.
Yes, boss.
Maggie!
Maggie turns back.
I know where to find her.
Tell her to come to the theatre immediately.
Vivian turns back to Lord Cromer's private secretary.
Mrs. Henderson would like to see Lord Cromer as soon as possible. Here, at the theatre.
I don't think the Lord Chamberlain is available.
Nonsense. Mrs. Henderson wishes to see him. Pray. Pass the message.
Vivian's outside addressing a large group of servicemen.
There's nothing I can do. The theatre is closed.
There's manners. Clear a path, please. Please, clear a path.
The presser here, Van Damme.
Yes, I don't know how they got hold of it, sir.
As Lord Cromer's secretary pushes through the crowds for his lordship, Laura arrives in her Rolls Royce.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Henderson.
Maggie?
Maggie holds the door open as Laura gets out.
This way.
Vivian steps up to Lord Cromer.
There seems to be a nationwide desire to keep this theatre open.
Nationwide? Please don't be delusional. I have learnt in these many years of dealing with artists to detest imagination.
Maggie pushes through.
Excuse me.
Laura follows her.
This street must be clear. It presents a very clear public danger. I may have to ask the police to interfere.
I'll talk to them.
Laura pushes towards the front.
What a commotion. They think the theatre encourages what they call, excuse me, over-congregating. Seems that we're too popular.
What, you mean we'd stay open if we were a failure? How ridiculous.
Listen, everybody. We have no choice. The government is forcing us to close. One more light, dimming in the heart of London.
He's turning into Winston again.
What Herr Hitler was unable to do, our own leaders are determined to accomplish. They are going to close the windmill.
Excuse me.
Laura's at the front.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Tommy. May I introduce myself? I'm Mrs. Henderson. You might see my name on a billboard over there, Mrs. Henderson Presents. Well, I am that Mrs. Henderson, and I have presented the windmill for 4 years now. Now, let me tell you why. Oh, dear, are you able to see me?
A soldier provides a box.
Oh.
Here you are, ma'am.
Oh, that's so sweet. Are you American?
Yes.
Strange people, lovely manners. Thank you, dear. Now, there was a war before this one. It was meant to end all wars. I lost my son in that war, my only son, Alec. He was 21. He perished from poison gas, I believe, on a field in France.
She lowers her head and swallows, then looks up.
Sometime after, I went to his room to clear away his things and I discovered the most amazing thing. What I believe you call a French postcard. Photograph of a naked woman. He'd been hiding it. And I realized that Alec had probably gone to his death without ever seeing a woman naked in real life. Well, I thought that was the most awful thing. When you lose a son in the war, you do know, no matter what anyone might say, that his death has been in vain. It won't stop others from following, other wars, other young men. Years later, after my husband had died and I was on my own, I decided to buy a theatre and put on a nude revue so that boys like Alec would never be in the same predicament. As long as the windmill exists, there's no need for a sad little postcard stashed underneath a bed, is there? Sometimes my feelings towards our young men in uniform have led me to foolish actions, which I do in my very soul regret. But I do know this, that my desire to present this gift to our young men has not been wrong. If we are to ask our youth to surrender their lives, then we should not ask them to surrender joy, or the possibility of joy. And if along the way we cause too many people to congregate in the street, who gives a fiddler's fuck?
Lord Cromer and his private secretary look uncomfortable.
There, I've said it. Don't you think everyone will be so much safer inside?
Yes. Oh, for Christ's sake, Van Damme. Take down that stupid sign and let your public in.
Laura steps down off her box and raises her brows wryly at Lord Cromer as the crowd piles into the windmill, clapping as they go. Inside, red curtains part to reveal the shadow of a windmill turning on gold curtains. Bertie in black tails steps forward holding a sign which reads closed, then turns it round so that it reads we never. He's joined on the stage by Jane in a black dress patterned with yellow flowers.
The sails of the windmill were turning, for years or the war had begun. And we know they'll keep turning for many years more, when the war will be over and won.
The Gold Curtains Part.
Blow winds from the south, blow winds from the north.
The Millerettes in pale yellow and pink dresses with full skirts dance onto the stage in front of a windmill, which continually turns against a backdrop of the white cliffs of Dover.
Blow winds from the east, blow winds from the west. Oh, the wind is a welcome sound.
The lighting dims except for a spotlight on Bertie and Jane and a golden sunset behind the windmill. The couple begin to waltz across the stage. Laura stands on the roof in the darkness, gazing wistfully out over London. Vivian steps up beside her.
I thought so.
She glances at him and smiles.
You're going to ask me to come down, aren't you?
I wouldn't dream of it.
She turns away from him and walks on along the railing.
Now you know my secrets.
Yes.
He follows her.
And I know none of yours.
No. Well, actually, I think you do.
Laura turns round to face him.
We have made rather a go of it, haven't we?
Yeah. You're a very irritating woman, but I wouldn't have missed this for the world.
I feel quite the same. Even though you're a very irritating man.
They turn to look out over the railings.
So we'll continue?
I'm game if you are.
Oh, yes. Passes the time of day.
As the sun sets, Vivian turns to look at Laura.
Let's watch the rest of the show.
You go inside. I'll stand here for a while.
As you wish.
He begins to head in, then pauses.
Would you fancy a dance?
A dance? Where?
Here.
Won't it be dangerous?
You're quite right. I'm a very cautious man, but it won't be dangerous. Not tonight. Just one dance?
Mr. Van Damme.
Mrs. Henderson.
With eyes fixed on each other, he takes her hand and they begin to dance. The whole company gather on stage. Bertie and Jane, the Deering sisters in smart army uniforms, and the Millerettes in their floral dresses. A sign is held up, "We never closed." Jane steps forward to wave on the audience to sing. Everywhere in the packed auditorium, servicemen hold up song sheets and join in. Company on stage wave to the audience, then step aside. The windmill behind them becomes transparent, and through its frame, Peggy, Frances, Vera, and Doris can be seen posing nude. Each of them turns to the audience and smiles seductively. One of them winks, then throws her head back and laughs. On the roof, Vivian and Laura continue to dance. Streaks of a red sunset sink into the horizon.
You've severed my toe.
Nonsense, I didn't touch it.
You're rather clumsy.
That's not something you say to a dancing partner.
You should have taken lessons before issuing an invitation.
I'm a very good dancer, thank you very much.
They glide across the roof, almost lost in the darkness, with the London city skyline behind them.
In India, only delicate men are good dancers. The ungainly are not so.
Listen, you old battle axe.
Don't you dare speak to me like that.
A caption. Laura Henderson died in 1944. In her will, she left the Windmill Theatre to Vivian Van Damme. ITFC audio description by Aileen Downey. Cast: Mrs. Laura Henderson, Judy Dench; Vivian Van Damme, Bob Hoskins; Bertie, Will Young; Lord Cromer, Christopher Guest; Maureen, Kelly Riley; Lady Conway, Thelma Barlow; Doris, Anna Brewster; Frances, Rosalind Halstead; Vera, Sarah Solmani; Peggy, Natalia Tenner; Eric Woodburn, Sir Thomas Allen; Ambrose, Richard Sims. Leslie Perks, Ralph Nozick, Jane, Camille O'Sullivan, Maggie, Laura Lee Rosen, Frank Lawson, Matthew Hart, Victor Thornton, Tony Delafu, Christian, Dorian Ford, Harry, Lloyd Hutchinson, Gordon, Toby Jones, Ken, Christopher Logan, Lord Cromer's secretary, Michael Culkin, Paul, Samuel Barnett. The Deering Sisters, Dinah O'Brien, Maria Roisin O'Brien and Rebecca O'Brien, comic Richard Dormer, Gracie Kramer, Shona McWilliams. Maharaja, Waris Hussein, male mourner, Anthony Carrick, female mourner, Anne Queensberry, chairwoman, Anne Lambton, civil servant, Sandy MacDade. Count Bandadine, Andres Borkowski, Harry Joseph Long, serviceman, Billy Seymour, GI, Matt Blair, pilot, Patrick Kennedy, Natalie Van Damme, Patty Love. Millerettes, Elise Odiev, Vanessa Barmby, Sophie Brown, Vicky Davids, Charlene Ford, Frances Garvey, Victoria Hay, Rachel Lawrence, Kate Parr, Melody Squire, Chorus Boys, Kieran Connolly, Joseph McMurray, Gilpin the Dog, Polly. Windmill Theatre Band, alto saxophone, clarinet, Roy Wilcox and Peter Hughes, tenor saxophone, clarinet, Tommy Whittle and Jamie Talbot, trumpet, flugel, cornet, Mike Lovett, trumpet, Ronnie Hughes, tenor trombone, Richard Edwards, violin, John Bradbury, orchestra leader, Gavin Wright. I'll String Along With You, written by Harry Warren and Al Dubin, Letting in the Sunshine, written by Noel Gay, Inspiration, P. Boyle, R. Bristow, C. Rose, music by George Fenton and Simon Chamberlain, The Grecian Frieze, P. Boyle, R. Bristow, C. Rose, music by George Fenton and Simon Chamberlain, Goody Goody, composed by Matt Malnick and John Mercer, Teddy Bear's Picnic, written by John W. Bratton and Jimmy Kennedy, Marseillaise, arrangement by George Fenton, Babies of the Blitz, D. Barnes, Aura Burrows, music by George Fenton and Simon Chamberlain, Blue Nightfall, Lozer Lane, Sails of the Windmill, lyrics Hislop Rose, music by George Fenton and Simon Chamberlain, All the Things You Are, J. Curran, O. Hammerstein II, Girl in the Little Green Hat, written by Jack Scholl, Bradford Brown and Max Rich. With special thanks to Vivian Van Damme's granddaughters, Susan Angel and Jane Kerner, the original Windmill Girls, Doris Barry, Marie Ameron, Joy Binham, Linda Carl, Maureen Clayton, Eileen Cruikshank, Charmian Innes, Jean Kent, Linda Kerlindsey, Margaret Law, Paulette Lester, Lulu Lewis, Peggy Martin, Jobna Milhouse, Moira Murphy, Angel Osborne. With gratitude, Gladys and Norman Pownall, Bob Hoskins Sr., For Carol. Based on We Never Closed by Sheila Van Damme and Tonight and Every Night by Vivian Van Damme, based on an idea and research provided by David and Kathy Rose. This film was made at Shepperton Studios, London, England, and on location in London and Surrey Road No. 1, 1914 to 1918 Commonwealth Cemetery, Picardy, France. Supported by the National Lottery through UK Film Council, a Heyman Hoskins production from Microfusion 2004 1 LLP, Pathé Pictures and BBC Films. Mrs. Henderson Productions Limited is the author and creator of this motion picture for the purpose of copyright and other laws in all countries throughout the world. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Although many of the events referred to in this film are broadly based on events which actually took place, the depictions of all events and of the characters involved have been fictionalized and therefore are not to be viewed as factually accurate. A Heyman Hoskins production, distributed by Pathé.